This is The Takeout.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
With Major Garrett.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
At this defining moment, change has come to America.
And we will make America great again.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett, Chief White House Correspondent of CBS, host of this great podcast known as The Takeout, joined as I am every week by the world's greatest podcast sidekick, Steve Shigaris, the political director of CBS News. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Major.
All right, folks, here's a great question I want you to ponder. So what would you do if you had a chance to have a meal with one of America's preeminent comedians, actresses, media critics, television hosts? What would you do? I know what you would do. You would drag her into a cafeteria, into a basement of a building in Midtown Manhattan, and serve her a banana. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's what you would do.
No one ever feeds me.
That's the voice of Samantha Bee, our very special guest here at The Takeout. Samantha, we are in the Primetime Cafe here at CBS Broadcast Center in Midtown Manhattan.
I love that you called it a cafe.
It is. Well, that's what they call it.
It says on the sign. You know what?
Yeah, that's
what
it says.
They call it. I'm not sure that's what we call it.
It's and for really the, quite nice.
For those watching on CBSN, here's my panini, chicken and bacon in a little plastic server dish. So there you go. Proof positive.
That it's a cafeteria.
That it is a real full-on cafeteria. There we go. Samantha, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My banana is delicious.
All right. I want to play some sound right off the bat to get us into our conversation. It is clip number one. Arden, if you please.
Yesterday, I voted in an American election for the first time, and I broke America. I am so sorry. And please don't even think of writing something stupid like, what a lucky break a Trump presidency is for comedians. The jokes just write themselves. No, no, no. Shut up. Jokes don't write themselves. Jews write jokes. And they are scared shitless.
There's so much to delve into there. So very
that
much.
Is quite
very
the can of worms that we just
rich
opened.
Tapestry.
Indeed. General topic. Okay. Is the Trump presidency a gift for comedians, or is every presidency, if viewed from a certain comedic point of view, a gift to a comedian?
Well, we do a political satire show, so any president would provide us with
fodder,
ample comedic material. You know, we certainly did not wish for this. And I will say, it's funny, when you were playing the intro to your show, there's a television screen right up there. And when I was hearing the words, ask not what your country can do for you, Donald Trump was talking. I was like, oh, imagine if he said something good. We certainly did not wish for this. I mean, we are making hay with it to some extent, but it's actually more difficult than you would imagine.
Because it's not funny to you?
It's not funny to us. The stakes are very high, and we feel that as citizens and human beings. And so trying to... You know, some stories emerge in a funny way, in a more obvious way, but there are other stories that emerge that are not funny at all, and then you have to find a way to tell that story satirically, and it's extremely challenging. It's exhausting, actually.
Is there anything from your vantage point that mm-hmm. is redeemable or so far been even nominally acceptable about the Trump presidency?
We could circle back to
okay. Sure.
I have to think about
okay,
that.
Sure.
I actually have to think about that for a minute, because the news comes at us so fast and furious.
It does in my day to day job as well. I know. It feels as if there's the old cliche about drinking from a fire hose. I wish it was just one.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a problem that is unique to us. The only problem that's unique to us is that we have to put a satirical spin on it. But
right.
everybody is having to just handle this information jet stream in their face at all hours of the day and night.
Is it the personality of this president that sets his opponents off, do you think, or is it simply the policies, or is it a combination of both? I think the reason why I ask this question is because the policies are going to generally happen with any Republican president.
Mm-hmm.
But his character is quite unique in the history of presidents in this country. So I guess I just ask the question, what has people of your ilk so scared of this president?
I think it's the incoherence of it. I think it's not something that can be measured by anything that any of us have ever experienced before. I think it's so reactionary, and things come out of the blue that you're not expecting, and nothing. It's so unique, and it is, you know, personality, but also the staff that he has assembled around him. It's a very, everything feels like a push and pull. There doesn't seem to be any coherent strategy that I can see, or any kind of, there's no predictability whatsoever, and that is making it very difficult for everyone.
We have a bit of a montage that may
I'm going to take a bite of my banana. Sure. while you run your montage that you were just talking about.
That's number five, Arden, if you please.
Excuse me. I've watched you on television. You're a real beauty.
Bing, 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 bing.
Failing pile of garbage.
Yeah. Interception, problems, fumble.
Major, fantastic.
They don't make movies like they used to, is that right?
Quiet.
That was good.
So that's kind of a small sampling of...
Really nice soundscape.
The president of the United States is emerging mm-hmm. and ever-evolving psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Having spent 16 months on the campaign, Donald Trump was the most improvisational, unpredictable
mm-hmm.
person I've ever heard talk about politics at a local level, state level, and certainly at a national level.
Mm-hmm. And I actually find that the part that is the most appalling, well, appalling, but it is appalling, how incurious he seems to be about any kind of anything, and sort of finding out after the fact, it's really disturbing, it's disruptive. We have, you know, just norms are being trashed left, right, and center. Ethics. I mean, I don't even know how to put it all together in a sentence. It's just, it's so monumental, and I wonder what will happen to all of us when it's over. Eventually, how we will restore those norms. It's really going to take an interesting... I mean, it's going to take like a very broad effort.
And on the flip side, his supporters say we wanted somebody to go into Washington and break all those norms and change how things are done and shake everything up and, quote, drain the swamp,
and
right?
Disrupt.
So what do you say to supporters of President Trump who listen to you and say... Well, this is what we voted for. This is what we were attracted to in a candidate, and why we so solidly supported this candidate for president of the United States.
I'm fairly sure they're not listening to me, but we do have.
They might be today.
They will be today.
Be. Oh, okay.
On this show, yeah, we have a very broad audience.
Well, actually, I do. I just feel like people have been sold a bill of goods. I actually have. You know, I have. I have compassion when you're tricked, it does not feel great. I understand that.
So you think he pulled the wool over the eyes of his supporters?
Well, he very obviously did. I don't even know if he knows that he did it. I mean, it's impossible for me to look at the landscape and not very readily be able to see that he has enriched the swamp in ways that none of us would have ever imagined. It's so much worse than we would have ever imagined.
By
the swamp
doing what?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, just the news today, I mean, or the news yesterday of Tom Price taking a private plane from...
HHS Secretary Tom
Price. Yeah, from Washington to Philadelphia. I mean, come on. Come on. These are remarkable. You know, there's just a pyramid of... You could talk endlessly about it.
Mm-hmm. And on your show, one of the things you tried to do, as The Daily Show did and as John Oliver's show does, is bring an aspect of journalism... an investigatory, curious mm-hmm. aspect of journalism to your comedy. Mm-hmm. Explain that to our audience a little bit.
Well, we want to... I'm sorry, I just took a big gulp of
that's
banana.
Good.
That's disgusting.
That's good.
Oh.
That was good.
You know, one of the things that we wanted to do was really just research our stories impeccably. So we have a full staff of... they're amazing researchers, and they all come from the world of journalism. It's important to us, if we're going to talk about things, to get it right.
And get it right, and then make a comedic point built around what you've
learned. Built around the correct
and
research.
And what you've discovered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That's the voice of Samantha Bee. We are coming to you from the Primetime Cafe. It's really a cafeteria in the basement of the CBS Broadcast Center
the
in Midtown.
Of the CBS Broadcast Center.
It's so much nicer than people can see. It's pretty
It's very nice.
Nice.
And you'll see it on CBS.
It used to sort of be a dump, actually.
Now it's
lovely.
Okay, so you can't say bowels and dump within 10 seconds of each other. I'm just not going to permit
that. I can say that. Maybe not you.
All right. That will take you down from World's Greatest Podcast site.
Now
and you are listening to The Takeout.
The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer. Everyone is listening to you now. But for too many of our citizens, a different reality exists. Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities, rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation. And the crime and the gangs and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
Samantha Bee, our special guest, what'd you think of that?
Oh my God. You know, I'm breathless. You know what's so funny? We asked Morgan Freeman to do something on our show, and I feel very ripped off that he didn't, because he would have done a great job. His voice.
But do you recognize those words?
Yeah. What did you think of that speech?
I do recognize the speech. Well, American Carnage.
Yes.
I
mean, there you go. Gives it away.
Yes.
Right. So that was Frank Caliendo doing Morgan Freeman.
Yes,
really? Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
On this podcast.
Totally fooled me. Yes. He is amazing.
He was on our podcast about 2 months ago, and we asked him to do that. We did a cold. We just dropped that copy in front of him and said, go.
But we had people who didn't support Donald Trump who said after that, wow, it sounded so much better coming out of Morgan Freeman.
It does. Now I don't care about having Morgan Freeman do the show.
Just book Frank.
He's incredible.
I want a percentage, Frank. I want a back end of that. Okay, on that booking. All right.
I want him to narrate the soundtrack of my life.
Which brings us to sort of a question. Mm-hmm. If someone else was saying some of the things that President Trump says, would it sound differently? Would it be received differently? Is there something about him that is like a force of static or psychic energy that gets in the way? Or is there something about his persona that makes it more difficult to evaluate neutrally what he is saying?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think so. I think that he often speaks extemporaneously, and that is... I mean, he just does.
That's the real thing.
I mean, I think that's the real article. I think it's hard to imagine another president calling Kim Jong-un Rocket Man, though it is my understanding that that was in the teleprompter.
Well, so it was taken out of the speech, and then the president and Stephen Miller put it back in. At the very last
minute. So that's on purpose. I mean, that's right. On purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's hard for me to separate the personality from the vernacular, actually.
Right.
They're very entwined with each other. I mean, it would be funny to hear ex-President Obama say Rocket Man. I can't imagine it.
From a comedy standpoint, what is it about Donald Trump that sort of makes it... I don't know. What are the comedic aspects of him? If you take away how you feel about him, mm-hmm. is it the character? Is it the way he says things? What makes him sort of humorous? So you look at Alec Baldwin's impression of him. What is funny about
well,
that?
Well, I don't find him humorous. I don't find him humorous in the least.
But people find Alec Baldwin's portrayal of him funny, right? What is that? Is it just his impression of him? Or is there more to it?
No, I think when people... I mean, I don't know. I'm just speaking off the top of my head now, but I think when people appreciate Alec Baldwin's impression of him, they're not really laughing at the giant suit and the long tie. Although I did my share of laughing at the long tie, because ties are
really
ridiculous.
Very long.
It was funny when he wasn't, our president-elect. It stopped being funny at that moment. Or, you know, it really stopped kind of being funny when he became the nominee. So there were just certain, there was a physicality for sure. But in general, I think it's more a catharsis. I think it's more seeing that physicality. I think it's more of a catharsis for people.
So it certainly
is for me. Like, I don't look at him and think, look at his hair. I mean, I don't care at all. It's sort of a ridiculous, aspect for sure, but it is just not on my, I'm not focused on that at all. I don't find him funny.
So you were the longest serving correspondent on The Daily Show. And Jon Stewart often said about the show that it wasn't a political show as much as it was a comedy show. It was a comedy show about politics, but it wasn't an activist show, which is what it was often accused of being by critics on the right. Do you see your show in precisely the same vein or something slightly different or slightly more activist?
I do see my show in precisely the same vein, actually. And I do, I mean, I think that, you know, when you veer into the territory of being too activist, you can't really come back to satire. And we walk that line, and it is a fine line, I will grant you, a very fine line. The one thing that I do try to do is put the weight of the show behind causes that I deeply care about. So we've raised a lot of, you know, we've raised a lot of money for various causes, and that is just a really important part for me of having this tool that we can use to help other people. We have a campaign right now with Omaze. We've raised, I think, $300,000 for this amazing charity that provides bras and feminine protection products to disadvantaged women all over the country. And it's just a small, really grassroots operation. They don't have a lot of money, but being able to use our voice, put it on a stage, I mean, it really is, it really helps individual people in a really small,
and you're
tidy
comfortable
and very
with that
necessary
merging of comedy, politics, and a bit of activism.
Sure, because we are merging the comedy with it. It's not just, you know, we're not just, I mean, listen, we did a huge segment on Juggalos last night, and I loved it. So,
and for our audience, what is that?
Juggalos?
Yes.
Audience, your whole audience is just going to have to go Google it. It's amazing. They're amazing. They're amazing.
J-U-double-G-A-L-O.
Yep, and they marched on Washington, and they were correct to do so, in my opinion.
Excellent. I want to play two clips from Jon Stewart, a memorable interview he did with Chris Wallace, 2011 at Fox News. Arden, back to back, please.
The bias of the mainstream media is towards sensationalism, conflict, and laziness.
Well, okay.
So if your suggestion is it's purely biased, you've proved very little. When did I say to you, I'm only a comedian? I said I'm a comedian first. That's not only. Being a comedian is harder than what you do. What I do is much harder. I put material through a process, a comedic process. I don't just sit and narrate.
But you are a political commentator. The comedy has a political...
Some of it.
Well, let me.
But it is comedy first.
Two questions.
I've never heard that clip before.
Yeah, they're both great.
That's great. That's really, really great.
I want to ask you about this indictment of John's against the mainstream media, which is indicted for all sorts of other imagined offenses. But his bill of particulars was sensationalism, shallowness, and laziness.
Listen, I actually...
And he decided to make The Daily Show something that was different, that my children often told me their father in the news business, they learned more, they thought, watching The Daily Show than what they were reading or watching elsewhere.
Right. Well, I will say this. I mean, The Daily Show, listen, I love John. I love John. I loved my time there. It was the most amazing training ground. The Daily Show did a fair... I mean, first of all, it was on four nights a week, which is different than us. But also, they did a fair amount of media criticism on that show, and we really don't. We don't really delve into that as much. It's not. It's not. It's somewhat our process. It's there a little bit, but not really. It's not the focus of our show. Our show is much more political satire, like just straight
up.
It's very, very straight up. So our shows are they actually are different.
Right. And John's other clip was about comedy first, and comedy is harder than journalism.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Okay.
Well, actually, I mean, I really believe in journalism, and I really cherish great journalism. And the truth is, we're parasites of great journalism. We couldn't do our show if people weren't out there digging through the garbage and investigating things. And being investigative journalists, we couldn't do what we do without all of that. And so we rely heavily on everybody's hard work.
There are many.
I congratulate you for doing the hard work that we got to Analyze.
We've got a garbage run right after the show, don't we?
Yes.
Okay,
oh,
I thought
cool.
So.
Oh, that's good. Fun.
There are many Trump critics, though, who blame the media for the rise of Donald Trump and blame the media for the election of Donald Trump.
Well.
What do you think of that? And keep in mind, by the way, you're in the world headquarters of CBS News.
Yeah, no problem.
Anyway.
Listen, the coverage, I mean, we just... I understand why no one took him seriously. I really do. We didn't take him seriously either. How could you? How could you? But, you know, the coverage was not... Yeah, there was a lot of coverage of empty podiums while Hillary Clinton was giving a speech about policy. I mean, there that just happened. That's just... It's measurable. We know that's true. So I don't... It feels like it's time for everybody to have a very strict look at that. I actually think every news organization could use a little
introspection.
Introspection.
That's the voice of Samantha Bee. You are listening to The Takeout.
I was not a citizen until only a couple of years ago. It just took a really long time to get citizenship. Our children are American-born. So we were in it but not of it for a really long time, working at The Daily Show. And I didn't like that feeling, actually. I felt like if I was going to comment on a place, I should take ownership of it and invest in it. I feel like if I'm going to live here, I'm going to pay all those taxes here. I really want to be in it.
That's the voice of Samantha Bee, our very special guest here at the Takeout Podcast. I'm Major Garrett, joined as I am every week by the world's greatest podcast sidekick, Steve Shigaris, political director of CBS News. Samantha, that was you on the Hollywood Reporter podcast, April 26th of this year, 2017.
I think I just realized my voice is really boring on podcasts. I'm sorry, everyone.
Not
I'm
at
to
all.
True. Woo! I'm trying to get some.
Amp it up a little bit, okay? Yeah, more energy, will you?
A little.
Okay.
Want another banana?
Yeah.
Find that a motivational core, will you please, Samantha? talk to us about that phrase, of it.
In it, but not of it.
Right.
I mean, yeah, we lived here for a long time. I mean, we were on a green card for a long time. My husband and I are both Canadian born. And so I came here to work on The Daily Show. And so we had permanent resident. We were permanent residents. We had our papers. We were permanent residents for a long time. And then we sought our citizenship once the dust settled of our lives. We had three kids, you know. When the youngest one was like a little older than a baby, then we thought, okay, we can actually do stuff now. So we did the citizenship for ourselves. Our kids are American born.
And how, just the citizenship ceremony, how was that?
You know what? It was extremely moving for me. It really was.
Where was it?
It is there's a place downtown. It's like in one of the federal buildings downtown.
Here in New York?
Here in New York, yep. Right. Yep. It's a room full of people who... It's a room full of the happiest people you can possibly imagine from all different countries. And there's a big American flag. It's not a glorious room. It's not fancy. It's just fold-up chairs and a small ceremony. They play a song and they play a video. It was the video of President Obama at the time. And I definitely cried. It meant a tremendous amount to me. It really represented something very special to me.
Were you recognized as someone famous at that ceremony?
Not at all. So nor should I have been.
Right.
You know? Yeah. We actually, because Jason and I were able to do it on the same day. And he was sitting next to a woman from Ghana, I think. I could be making that the country up in my head. And he was like, oh, you must be so happy. And she was like, I'm so happy. And he was like, do you miss Ghana at all? And she was like, no. Are you kidding me? I've never been happier in my life. Shut up.
It was Ghana, a real country in Africa, unlike Nambia.
Nambia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
That one up.
All righty.
Samantha, you will receive one of these extra special Takeout podcast stickers signed by yours truly, Major Garrett.
Nice.
Yes, they are the only bit of swag this show currently has, but we have higher aspirations to be much more swagadelic in the years and months ahead. But for right now, this is it. This is the sum total of our swag.
Thank you.
There's only one way, unless you're a guest, that you can obtain that sticker. Steve Shigaris, please tell Samantha and our viewers and our listeners how that happens.
Well, if you'd like your very own Takeout podcast sticker signed by Major, send your request along with a self-addressed stamped envelope to Takeout Sticker, care of CBS News at 2020 M Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20036. I would like to point out we received over 300 letters so far from Canada.
You did?
Not from Ghana.
Not
from Namibia.
Not all 300 are from Canada.
From Canada, the United States, 48 states, and the District of Columbia.
Yes.
And several other foreign countries.
Countries not named the United States. We don't call them foreign countries.
I'm calling them foreign countries.
Outsider countries.
We call them countries not named the United States of America, okay? Only foreign to you, Steve Chigueras.
Did you receive any letters from the Axis of Evil? Yeah. Okay.
We're working on it.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Usually we just get a pouch, you know, where we open in secret.
Yeah, when your show, you know, when you get on the radio, you're going to have someone open those pouches for
exactly.
you.
Exactly, exactly. So let me ask you this about your approach to comedy and mm-hmm. if it is in a old-style sense, narrow casting to your audience and your audience only, or broadcasting to an audience you want to be entertained, even though it may not agree or may not agree with you.
Well, let me tell you something that might surprise you. When we went to the conventions last year, and you know, a lot of people, more people, I would say, at the Republican convention came up to me and loved the show. You know, because some things are just funny on their own merits, and some things are just pointed, and it's worth knowing what other people's points of view are. It's worth watching other people's shows, even if you don't agree with them. So, I don't, you know what?
Did that surprise you?
It did surprise me. It actually
did. It
does
surprise me, so I'm curious. At the moment, did it surprise you?
It did surprise me, and it made me very happy, because I think a good joke is a good joke across any of your belief systems. And I love Republicans. I'm sorry, I have a lot of Republican friends, and I really legitimately, and no one would ever believe this, but it's true. I just don't see this as an us versus them. In my life, it's not my practice or my life at all. I was going to say something else. I had a really great point to make, and I totally lost it. Oh, you know what? I don't play for any audience, really.
Okay.
So, I mean, I hate to say that. I play for myself. I do what I think is good and funny.
Because one of the things that was often said, whether it was true or not, about Johnny Carson and David Letterman mm-hmm. is that their middle American sensibilities mm-hmm. informed their humor mm-hmm. and sort of kept them within guardrails, not only of the times and of the culture, mm-hmm. but of the sense of where they came from.
Sure, sure. Well, I do comedy within the guardrails of what I find funny and what I find important. It's a very personal show to me and to the people who work with me. We make it for ourselves, and we put it out in the world, and we see who comes along for the journey. That's the only way that it works for us. Comedy by committee doesn't work for me at all.
Major mentioned Carson and Letterman. Mm-hmm. They didn't, I mean, Letterman toward the end did, but they never really wore their opinions on their sleeves when it came to politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's changed, obviously, I think Jon Stewart was you know, important in that change.
Mm-hmm.
Although there were comedians in the 60s and 70s who obviously wore their political points of view
in terms of having a big show about
it. Platform.
And it seems as if now, you know, no one's afraid to sort of show their stripes on that, which you could criticize or not. But I guess my question to you, do you think it contributes to what I think is an overall polarization of what's going on in this country, where people are not afraid to share their opinions very publicly?
I get asked that question a lot, and I don't care all that much.
Because it is what it is.
It is what it is. I have a platform. I do my show. You don't have to watch it. Not everybody in the world is. It would be different if people were forced to watch it and had toothpicks in their eyelids and had to sit there and endure my ranting or whatever you call it, or my jokes. You know, we have choice. We're at peak TV. I have a certain viewpoint. I express it. I couldn't do the show any other way. I wouldn't want to be on television if I couldn't do the show exactly this way. I'd probably go be a farmer. I love that too. So for me, I mean, I did not create this polarization. I'm not the one setting policy. I'm not the one making decisions that actually affect people's lives. I'm not the one trying to rob people of their health care. These are problems that exist with or without me. I'm not making that worse. I'm just commenting on the things that other people are enacting.
And I think you actually make an interesting point about the evolution of television, right? You're saying you're not forcing people to watch your show.
No.
Well, we're living in a world now where you have choices of what to watch, right? And Carson and Letterman, when they started, there were not that many choices. And so their bosses probably said, tamp down on the controversial stuff, because that is a
there is a
broadcasting aspect to this. Now people have a choice on what they want to look at.
And I really do think that people, more so than ever, seek an authentic experience. I mean, this is just the evolution of our culture. That's what I seek. When I watch something myself, when I choose a program for myself to watch, I want someone to take me to a world. I want to feel a firm hand. I want to be taken somewhere. I want to do the thing, and then I want to out. I want it to be an authentic experience. Create a world for me. Let me inhabit that world, and then get rid of me. I just don't like things that feel really focus grouped.
Right.
And never have.
30 seconds before we go to break. Are you the ultimate judge on whether a joke's in or out of the show?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, right. Yeah. So are you ever overruled by your group of writers?
No, I'm not overruled by the writers at all. I've been overruled like maybe two times by the network, because that's, you know, that happens and that's valid. But no one can overrule me. My name is on the show.
She's running this with an iron fist.
Runs the show. Samantha Bee, full frontal. She's our guest. This is Major Garrett, Steve Shigaris. You're listening to The Takeout.
You're listening to The Takeout.
And loving every moment of it. Kind of subdued sounds around. You know, we don't have the big clatter of a big restaurant as we typically do here at The Takeout. That's because we're at the Primetime Cafe. It's really a cafeteria in the basement of CBS World Broadcast Headquarters in Midtown Manhattan. You're listening to The Takeout. And you already know this, but I need to remind those who are brand new to this experience. New episodes of this very fine podcast known as The Takeout are available every Friday morning. We most earnestly invite you to subscribe, rate, and comment on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. That's Google Play, not Google Play.
Please comment. We love your comments.
Go to takeoutpodcast.com. Follow us. You know all that stuff. Like us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, @takeoutpodcast. That's @takeoutpodcast. Samantha Bee is our most special guest. She will rocket us into a new stratosphere of audience appreciation. Fanfare and adoration, because that's what Samantha Bee does every single day of her life. Talk to us about getting into the business and then moving from working as a component part of an incredibly successful, path-breaking show, The Daily Show, and then saying to yourself, now it's time for me to do my own show, and I'm going to sell that, produce it, create it, and move it.
Well, you know, TBS actually approached me to do a show.
Okay.
I did not approach them. We had a relationship already we had established, because we have a scripted show also on TBS called The Detour, and it's really very funny.
Tell our audience when that's on.
That is on. It is not currently. Is it? God. It's on Tuesdays.
Look it up.
9th. It's an amazing show. My husband is the star of it. Anyway. Oh. He's amazing.
We have a sound effect for amazing husbands, don't we?
You do? I hope so.
We do.
Yeah, it's just the regular one, bro. There we go.
Oh, that's a yeah.
No, we don't have an extra special one for amazing husbands.
Hello,
okay?
Babe. Something like that. yeah. So they definitely approached me, and I had a moment where I was like, do I want to do this? Well, that's an interesting idea. And then I thought, well, of course, what an idiot. How could you not jump on that? So I did jump on it rather immediately. The name came from one of my best friends, Alana Harkin. She works on the show now. She's actually a correspondent on the show. She was on in a piece last night, so that's hilarious. She's amazing at a million things, but also amazing at naming things. And so it was just, we were on a text chain for like a month trying to come up with names. And all the names were very boring. They were all like, this hour tonight at TBS time. It was just so bad. The Samantha Bee Show. And she literally texted it to me. And I immediately, I was like, oh, yeah, that's it. Okay, thank you.
What does full frontal represent? What does it mean? Meant to convey?
Well, I think it's meant to convey an audaciousness. And I think that it, lives up to the name.
Nudity,
in that sense.
Major.
Just
nudity.
Full,
what do you think?
Full nudity, which everyone is really craving from me, a 47-year-old mother of three. Oh, yeah.
And is there a different set of pressures? Are there a different set of pressures? Let me get my grammar correct.
Mm-hmm.
Fronting a show.
Sure.
And being a participant in a show.
Of course. The pressures are immense. It's a very... You know, it's not pressure from without as much. I mean, you have to do a lot more. You have to do a lot more press, and you have to actually really engage with the outside world in a totally different way. So that's actually it's a tremendous amount of work promoting the show, but promoting it effectively. So that is one aspect of it. But
that's
also
a whole other job.
It is another full time job. But I think it's more. There's a lot of responsibility when it comes to, you know, heading up a staff of people who rely on you to be cheerful and positive. They rely on you to be positive in a way that you just don't have to. You don't have to lead people when you're not the leader. But when you are running a staff of people, you can't succumb to. you can't necessarily succumb to your insecurities and your, you know, and feeling terrible on a day. And you do have to. You have to present yourself in a certain way, and that's actually very challenging.
Right. You say that in sort of a light, lilting voice, but that can be, I'm sure, on some days, really hard.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Listen, it's not like it's a very first world problem.
Understood.
It's not a complaint that I'm making. It's just an interesting, it's really a very new world for me, and I've struggled with a lot of it, and I don't think that I've, you know, at times I have not done a great job, and I'm always learning. This has been really just handling a big group of people has been one of the deepest learning curves that I've ever been on, and I really do enjoy it. It's starkly different.
Can you tell our audience just a little bit about how you became a girl from Canada and then a correspondent on the Jon Stewart show?
I don't really know.
Like, what happened in between?
She had parents. That's how she really became a girl from Canada.
A man and a woman fell in love in high school.
But you know, it's not. It's a unique.
It is unique.
A unique path.
Was that one of the suggested titles for the show? A Girl from Canada?
Yes. Yeah. And I had to have like overalls. It's so cute. We're just using the set from Hee Haw. It's really fun.
Hee Haw, Ottawa. Right.
Yeah, totally. I was doing comedy. I really was doing comedy. But right at the end of my, I was an actor. I was doing comedy all the time. I loved it. And I just got the opportunity to audition for The Daily Show. They came to Toronto. They were looking for a woman, and I auditioned for them, and I got the job. And that could not have been more random or more of a lucky break. It was my absolute lucky break. I was ready for that break, you know? Opportunity met preparedness, for sure. Those two worlds collided.
How much of a world of comedy is going on in Canada? I mean, obviously there's a ton of it,
yeah.
But
Canada's full of very funny people.
But people stay there the rest of their careers? How do you get out of that?
Well, it's not so easy to get your papers and move down south. And it's certainly, there's a really robust comedy community there. My life and comedy career would have been fine if I had stayed there. It just happened to take a different path, and I got the opportunity to come south. But The Daily Show was my favorite show. I watched it in Canada. It really was my favorite television show of all television shows. So that was an additional element.
Was it a moment of disbelief when you got that job? I mean, what was going through your head?
Utter disbelief, of course.
Well, not only that, which brings me to the question I was just going to ask, which everyone in our business remembers the first time they had to do the thing that they naturally do, which is that first, in your case, your first bit.
Yeah.
My first live shot, whatever.
Yep.
Mostly for me, I'm sure not for you. Highly traumatic. My first live shot.
Terrible.
What was that pressure like?
Oh my God. Just the weight of the world. You know that feeling of just, oh, when do I get fired? I mean, I guess I just go in the next day and get fired. I mean,
when do they tap you on the shoulder and say, we were really kidding. Yeah, get out of here.
Oh, sorry. Thanks, we thought you were someone else. Right. This is a mistake.
We thought you had chops.
Yeah, whoops. I actually, it's funny because my husband, he does comedy too, and he was doing it in Toronto too, and I was like, okay, give me 6 months and we'll see if I get fired, so don't move down to New York. So we kept our house, we kept everything, he stayed in Toronto, and then I just felt it out. We just were not totally convinced that it was going to work.
And was there a moment that you said, I do got it?
Yes, but it didn't
first
come
season,
for, it didn't
second
come for,
season?
It didn't come for a long time. I think it took me about 2 years to feel like, okay, I think I know what my role, I think I know exactly what the role that I'm to play is. It took me about 2 years to get there. That's a long time.
It is a long time, but so much great comedy has transpired after that and will continue.
Thank you.
Samantha Bee, our very special guest here at the Primetime Cafe in the basement of the CBS Broadcast Center, the world headquarters of CBS News in Midtown Manhattan. Steve Chigueras, world's greatest podcast sidekick. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Major.
And you've been listening to and most thoroughly enjoying The Takeout.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Katiana Krachenko, and CBS News Radio. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, visit takeoutpodcast.com.
That was good. This is a hell of a dinner.